At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, everyone. This is your good friend. Oh, my goodness. Your good friend, Patrick O'Dowd, joined by David Ungar, welcoming you into another edition of the Four Corners podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. And off to a great start, Dave. Not what I was looking forward to today.
I thought you were going to say that this is your good parent, Patrick O'Dowd. I was going to say you are a good parent. It sounded like you were going to start to say that. So
how are things out on the other coast? Because I got to tell you, the last 3 days here on the East Coast in New England have been glorious. I mean, we're talking 77, maybe an 80 degree high at tops this morning as we record here on Sunday. I woke up to a 55 degree bedroom. It was awesome. It was cold enough that I had to turn the fan off in the bedroom so that I wasn't like cold. It's been perfect New England, like mild summer weather out here. And this is my old man conversation of the day. So
for SummerSlam yesterday, the temperature in New York, I was like looking at it as like 80 in August in New York. That's shocking.
It was good.
So yeah, you guys are having a hell of a good week or two. It's typically hot out here. I will say it's not as bad as it normally is. I mean, not to say that 99, 98, 100 isn't hot, but you get a lot of days this time of year where it's 105, dipping up to 110. And we have not had like a real string of triple digit days out here in a while. Like played golf with all three guys from work had to take a day off because we're maxed out on vacation. So we all came down to, they came down here to Bakersfield and we played and it wasn't bad. You know, despite their complaint, man, the sun's hotter down here in Bakersfield. I'm like, it's the sun, but I get what they're saying.
it's so funny to hear you talk about, like, I had to take a day off because I'm full. Living in the state of Massachusetts and just some of the things they do for workers in Massachusetts, and particularly working at the University of, I get so much time off that I literally cannot stay under my vacation time max, and I lose time. It's really, really funny. If you look at my pay stub, I lose an hour and a half of vacation time to then accrue the hour and a half of vacation time. I'm forever stuck. And, that and the fact that I don't take a lot of sick days and I just have an obscene amount of sick time available, I feel you on that front.
Well, yeah, people like us who are air quoting at will, but not really. We always seem to get these maxed out.
I'm not an at will employee.
You're tenured, huh?
I am protected, sir.
Nice.
I have a union. I am protected by the Massachusetts Teachers Association. So
there you go.
Fist bump. But you mentioned SummerSlam. Now we're recording here on Sunday before night two has happened. I'm assuming we will hear plenty about, you know, reactions to night two come, you know, yesterday. Actually, not yesterday, because that's Bandwagon Nerds Day. There will be reaction pods coming down the line. But I did watch part one this morning in my routine, and I couldn't help but think, and I feel justified covering wrestling a little bit on the Four Corners podcast since CBS Sports and ESPN cover results. So
sure,
fair game. You won't hear me be the bandwagon nerds, Patrick, on the Four Corners podcast, but the WWE really has its formula of fine. And that's really just what they put out. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing necessarily, but it is a relatively palatable professional wrestling experience for the masses. And that was what I walked out of night one which was relatively predictable. Although I'm glad that Jade Cargill did not beat Tiffany Stratton. You can still see clear as day that Jade Cargill needs a lot of work. And, you know, for all the crap that people want to give Tiffy and Tiffy time and her character and what is she even doing or who she even is. Greg DeMarco texted during the match. I wasn't watching it live. I was out catching some classic 90s rock at a live local cover band and sipping some beers. But Greg sent me a text that was like, Tiffany Stratton is why NXT works, and Jade Cargill is why you shouldn't skip it. And I thought that was a very apropos and good point.
That, yeah, I mean, I actually thought that was one of the better matches of night one. And I'll go even further to say
I think you got to give that credit to Tiffany, though. I don't think, see that Jade isn't there.
They both look pretty. I mean, the end spot was crap. I mean, that was just so forced and slow and just awful. But the good thing about that match, what I told the guys, I think I was texting with Ray and Platt and Tunney, and I was saying that what I like about the match so much is that both of these girls have been in the ring with people with much more experience than them. And have been carried at times, you know. Charlotte carried Tiffy at times. Asuka clearly carried Jade at times. They didn't have that safety net yesterday, so they had to deliver. And I thought largely they did. And I think that's a testament to, it is a testament to NXT. It's a testament to how they've kind of slow burned Jade. I definitely think she has improved. I'm with you. I didn't think it was the time to pull the belt off Tiffy because I don't think Jade can carry that yet. But it was a good example to see just what she can do in that spot, and I think largely she delivered. They both did.
I think it was very clear to me that like Tiffany carried the match, in my opinion, and just the way that I
she should.
When it comes to Jade Cargill in the ring, you can still see her processing what I need to do and how I need to set up, and. This is an extreme comparison. So when I say this, don't everybody flip out. You shouldn't look like fucking Jelly Roll in the ring, positioning yourself properly to make sure the spot goes off correctly. You want that out of Jelly Roll because that dude has never stepped in a ring. So get yourself in the right spot so Logan Paul doesn't kill you. You shouldn't expect that out of Jade. And sometimes you still see a lot of that. And, you know, there are just a couple of times where, you know, Tiffy's timing helped save a move or made something happen. Other than that, though, I don't want to get into a rabbit hole. I don't really want to talk too long about SummerSlam. I have this fun little potpourri of stuff I want to talk about in this first segment with you because I think it'll be entertaining. I wonder, and this is if a Greg DeMarco show happens this Wednesday, and I just at this point I have to say if it happens, I want to ask Greg I feel like there's a Gunther problem because what do you do with Gunther when he's not a champion?
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer. Like, I don't know the answer. And so I think it's very interesting because I don't see him as like a Drew McIntyre who I just, and maybe this is a byproduct of what I see as an aura and a persona that they've created for him. Him doing anything less than being, you know, being the number one threat to a title or the one carrying the title makes zero sense to me.
Yesterday, like, cause Platt was really impressed with the Gunther versus Punk match. And I know it was slow in some places and it was supposed to be because the whole purpose of the story is Punk getting his ass kicked until Gunther makes that big mistake.
And Gunther's a methodical wrestler.
He is.
Like, that's his style.
He's methodical, but Tunney would call him boring because Tunney did call him boring. And I don't necessarily agree with
that. Sorry,
Tony,
that he didn't do flippy shit super fast. Like, I'm sorry.
Tony doesn't like that stuff. He doesn't like that stuff at all. But I started to...
So does he like wrestling? Like, I don't understand. Anyway, go ahead.
I started to wonder, like, if Gunther could actually benefit from, like, a face turn, which is so out of character for him, but it might bring out some of that personality that people think, hey, this is missing. Like you're saying, what do we do with him if he's not a champion or in the hunt for a title? Maybe if you can figure out a way to, you know, or to flip him face, that's not the worst of ideas.
Well, you know who he feels like to me, except on the roster and wrestling regularly, but I don't think he should actually, is I think he's Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
In the sense that the thing that makes Brock Lesnar so effective in his, you know, most recent sort of era with the company is he comes and then he goes away. And then it's, when is he coming back? Comes, yeah, and he goes away. And I don't know that Gunther's there at that point in the WWE's eyes in his career, but like Gunther could go away.
Well, he's going to go away. I don't know if you heard what's going on with him. He's going to go away for a while.
I literally watch like the PLEs.
Now, I'd heard he was going to take some time off, and this is coming from Meltzer, so I immediately disregard it. But you know, they're saying there's a nasal injury or something like that that he may need to have surgically fixed, and that may be true. That may be true, but I like the comparison to Brock,
that's
though.
True, that's great.
Yeah, I think
if that's true. I actually think that's great for
the it's Gunther good for him
character persona, and then you don't have to. Yeah. Like I don't always like to default to, and people do this all the time. And I'm not saying this just because you said it, so I want to be very, very clear. But a lot of times, people are like, when somebody gets stuck, it's like, oh well, the only way we can fix this is we gotta turn him face, or we gotta turn him heel, or we gotta do something. And sometimes that's not true. Sometimes it's just the absence piece is something that would work really, really well for Gunther. And so to hear that he's, you know, about to possibly go in and get some work done, some medical work done, and be gone on the shelf for a little bit and just away from wrestling, that's, I think, terrific. I love that. Do that.
Bring him back.
And then
for
when
the,
he comes back, he's gonna
bring
be
him back. Yeah, bring him back for the Rumble. Show up at the Rumble. No, but I was gonna say your comparison to Brock is really good because, you know, Brock was this methodical plotting machine. You know, I mean, and we all know Brock can do more in the ring because anybody who watched him wrestle Kurt Angle knows there's more than just German suplex after German suplex, suplex city. And then like his last run where the roles are reversed and Roman was the tribal chief and Brock, right, you got to see all this personality come out of Brock that really added an element to him. And you're like, wow, you know, he's really, there's a lot more to this character, yeah, and Gunther could benefit with the boom box or the cowboy hat showing up in a tractor.
And I'm the type of person who doesn't need Gunther to show up. Like part of his appeal to me and the thing that I hope they don't ever take away is the fact that he really is like no nonsense, there's no silly, and he's unique to that. Like his personality is that he's just better than everybody else. So, All right, SummerSlam Night 2 coming up tonight. Do we expect, we talked about heel turns, you know, John Cena gave an impassioned promo on Friday Night SmackDown. This is, of course, coming out on a Tuesday, so who knows if Dave's right or wrong. Or if I'm right or wrong, but is tonight it back to Cody with the belt tonight with maybe a nefarious Cody Rhodes in place?
That's what I've predicted. I mean, I got the Seth Rollins cash in right, so I will almost. But I mean, I say that, but a lot of people were speculating the injury was a fake. But I think it's a double turn tonight. Almost damn near a triple turn because John's already turned face allegedly with a promo. So if he shows up and he's like, it was all bullshit. And then in the end, The Rock really, it's The Rock and Cody who have aligned to turn on John. I think that would be beautiful. I'm hoping for that. That's still my prediction. But we'll see. We'll see what they do. They got something. Yeah, they got something planned.
Very nice. Yeah, of course they have something. You know, a lot of people expressing disappointment over night one acting. I think people have too high expectations over what a PLE is going to deliver. And I feel like fine. Like it by no means blew anybody out of the water. Was it the worst SummerSlam of all time? No.
Oh, God, no.
Is it the best SummerSlam of all time? No. The less it I is, hear Cardi B talk, the better.
It is very comparable
but
to WrestleMania 41 Night 1. Really good. I mean, good stuff right all the way around. Surprise ending. There's a lot of stuff in between that's, you know, it's like, all right, sure, whatever. But
all right, I want to cut the wrestling talk short because I've got other things I want to talk about in our potpourri list of topics. And this next one, Dave, you're a golfer.
Yes.
Right. Like you enjoy golfing. So
I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, it's like being bullied, which is my segue here. So I want you to put your golfer hat on and I want you to think about, because I'm going to tell you a story of what's going on in the world of professional bowling right now. And I want you to think about it in the realm of golf, because I'm hoping you can find a copy. Because I've long argued that bowling and golf actually have a lot of similarities in just sort of the fortitude and what it takes to play and how it works. It's a very mental game. While the deliveries are different and the sport is different, I feel a lot where a lot of bowling is you're in your own head. Golf is the same way. A lot of golf is you're in your own head. Even when you're bowling in doubles, you know, or teams or whatever, you still have your mental approach that you have to take. So United States Bowling Congress put out a survey to all of its members that they could do, asking folks whether or not what they felt should happen with a certain piece of equipment, namely bowling balls that are constructed out of urethane. Now, to explain why this is such a big deal, the sport of bowling has changed quite a bit since the days of you know, Pete Weber, even. In that bowlers today, especially bowlers who bowl two-handed, throw a ball with an extremely high amount of rev rate and speed. And oil patterns today are designed in such a way to break down extraordinarily fast. And if you throw a ball with high rev ratings, then your ball is going to hook more powerfully and is going to cause, you know, the lanes to break down a little bit faster, which then makes things challenging for those types of bowlers. And so one of the solutions that they have, and that most professional bowlers do nowadays on these heavier oil, complicated oil patterns, is they use bowling balls that are made out of urethane as a cover stock. So I use a lot of reactive resin balls. I don't have a urethane ball. I don't throw hard or fast enough to really justify using a urethane ball. And what a urethane ball does is it pushes oil forward on a lane. And so if you ever look at a bowling pattern, you'll always see there's a line and then a space in front of the pins where the oil pattern ends, and you have the dry, you know, like this dry spot that's known as the pocket. And the pocket is where your friction, the spin from, you know, going down the oil hits the friction and then hopefully drives into the pins to throw a strike. Urethane takes that and pushes the oil further down the lane into the pocket. And with a urethane ball, it actually works to a high rev rate, high speed bowler's advantage, because it keeps the surface just basically more favorable. And so the question then came up amongst how should the USBC, the United States Bowling Congress, make a change to spec rules for bowling equipment? No different, say, Dave, to certain types of clubs being made to be used on the tour, and whether that's right or wrong. And it's really created this interesting discussion between high rev rate bowlers like someone like Jason Belmonte, who, you know, is one of the most famous bowlers in the world, or an EJ Tackett, who, even though he's not a two-handed bowler, somehow, some way puts amazing rev rates on the ball and has terrific speed, to somebody like a Jacob Buttriff, who doesn't quite throw it as hard, or an Anthony Simonson, who is a two-handed bowler who doesn't quite throw it the same way. USBC is arguing it's to kind of even the playing field for all types of bowlers. Bowlers who use urethane feel it is an unfair targeting of the way that they throw a ball, and that other players should have to learn to adjust to that. I asked you to think about it in terms of golf, because I can think of like drivers, like certain types of drivers, I'm sure, when they come out and then become debated or legal or illegal. I think back to baseball earlier this year with the torpedo bats and people going nuts over torpedo bats. So from a sports, you know, side of it all, not necessarily bowling, but just in general, where do you stand on leagues and evolution of equipment? Because that's what I think this is. It's an evolution of equipment.
Well, your comparison to golf is more on point than you think. Because for the past 2 years, there's been lots of discussion that golf balls go too far. And it's a combination of certain things. You know, you got a combination of golf balls, which I know a lot of people think it's a golf ball. How different can they be? You would be surprised at the construction and how the makeup of golf balls have really, you know, they've got balls for people like me with slower swing speeds, to get better distance for people like me, or people like Tunney who have a higher swing speed. So you've got that argument, and they've actively looked at ways, well, how can we fix this? You know, this is, they're playing on a lot of courses that was designed for a previous era, you know, like an era where 300 yard drive was like not the norm. It was the norm, but it wasn't like, you know, people weren't putting it 350 like Rory and that sort of stuff and all that. So they've tried to actively think of ways, well, how can we scale this back? Do we introduce certain regulated golf balls that are designed for these particular guys, which we know is going to hamper their efforts to drive the ball 330, 350 yards. Like you're saying, they've made a lot of advances in equipment, things like that. Countering all that, though, is the fact that you got to take, you know, physics into consideration, and certain points, you know, physics are going to limit even what the best equipment can do or what the best balls and that sort of thing can do. I don't know. The idea that deliberately trying to stifle competitive advancements just for the sake of, well, you know, we don't want this stuff getting out of hand. We're trying to keep a competitive balance. I get it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, lead, follow, or get out of the way kind of sort of mentality with a lot of this stuff. It's like, if you can't match up with them, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, that sort of thing. And I think if you're looking at equipment, balls, how certain things are constructed, how certain rules are done, you know, I mean, are baseball stadiums going to start building stadiums with an impossible distance to reach into left field, left center, center field, you know, make it 450 yards to center field? Okay, well, you're not going to get too many home runs going to center field. But does that help the game at all? Does it just stifle the most exciting part of like baseball, which is a home run? With footballs, American football, let's be specific, is a little bit different because you do have to make advances in equipment to make the game safer, because you can't keep going on like they are with the, you know, people getting head injuries. And you look at what happened in New York this week with the shooting at NFL headquarters, and is that linked to CTE? And so you got to ride the lightning and draw a balance on that sort of thing. But you know, I think it's a sign of the times. They're going to advance technology. People are in better shape. You know, I think that's another thing you got to keep in mind. Like golfers are in better fitness. Football players are bigger. They're faster. They're stronger.
Yeah.
Basketball players are faster. Baseball players are, without steroids, just as powerful as they've probably ever been. So it's hard. How do you do that? You know, how do you keep it balanced not ruin the game?
Well, that's the thing is the question I think the big reason why this came up in the world of bowling is that there's no adjustment other than to jump on board and try to magically discover how to, wow. Like if you're someone like me who I play a lane pretty straight, like, which is, you know, my ball doesn't have a like huge arcing hook. Like I kind of goes down long down the lane. And then, you know, the hope, you know, the goal is for it to then snap late. If the oil's getting pushed because everybody's using urethane balls, then my ball isn't going to hook. It's going to sit on the outside and it's going to spin down the lane. And one of the best points, and I think is what's why the question is being considered, is there's no adjustment for a bowler like me that I can make that helps me. Because if the only thing that helps me is the fact that I'm left-handed. And so lefties, a lot of time, are the old, like I might be the only one on a pair. So I can shoot whatever ball I want all day, and it's not going to matter because nobody's pushing an oil down the lane. So it's just an interesting thing. It's an interesting fact.
How often do they oil lanes? Is that like after hours, or does it happen during the day, or that sort of thing? Or
so for a league night, and you got to understand, for a league night, I don't know, and tournaments are different too. Tournaments, they oil the lanes once, and that's it for the day. And so you have to adjust to the conditions as they change. League, they oil right before the league starts. So usually about 30 minutes or so. I'm usually, you know, walking into the bowling alley and they're finishing up oiling their lanes as they try to get things ready. So it makes a difference, but it's more about the progress of the game and the conditions, because the way the game works, like, and this is why this is where it is different from golf. Like the course itself isn't going anywhere. Like everybody's playing on the same layout of a course with the same hole in the same spot. Whereas over the course of a game, it's not like the hole moves closer or farther away as the game goes on, which is kind of what happens with, you know, you get the weather conditions. I understand that.
No, I was going to say they do change the whole. Change the whole location. You know,
but in the day that you're bowling or in the day that you're playing, like you and I are playing at the same time, it's the same. Whereas on the day that I'm playing, my first game, the lane conditions are different than my third game. Which is a typical bowling is league night is three games. So,
yeah.
All right, we're going to take our first commercial break. When we come back, we're actually going to talk about some professional sports, a little baseball, a little football, all the good stuff. So thank you for indulging Dave and I in some speculation, some speculative sports conversations. When we come back, we'll get more into the nitty gritty of the sports you know and love and are familiar with. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Four Corners Podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com. Bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Four Corners Podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network, a part of thechairshot.com. Make sure you head over to prowrestlingtees.com/chairshot for a sweet, sweet Chairshot shirt. Only $20. Spend a few dollars more. Get it soft style. Your giblets will thank you. Dave, neither one of our teams in the world of baseball are what we could say, what's the word, competitive.
Well, your guys are still in the wild card hunt.
So here's how you know your team is not. Because my team was full on sell mode as much as they were going to be at the trade deadline. The Cardinals basically traded away their bullpen, like their primary guys outside of Jojo Romero, who I think was probably because the new general manager wanted to keep him unless he gets traded during the offseason. They traded away some contracts that are set to expire at the end of the season. They got some prospects. They are clearly in full rebuild mode the rest of the way. Like, they may show up on the wild card standings sheet right now as 5.5 back, but that is a false flag 5.5 back. They're in no position to be considered heading towards a wild card berth or anything like that. The Nationals, by the way, at 44-66, you're only 16.5 out. You know, you can make a run.
Yeah. But,
It's
the Nats.
The Cardinals are at 56-56. They're not going anywhere. What I wanted to do today with baseball, though, is we've done this a couple of times. We're going to do it again. Looking at our division and the wild. Actually, you know what? I want to look at the division and the wild card race. As we are here in August now, we're heading into the final month and a half of the season. Where are, in your opinions, the most compelling races, be it for a division or the wild card in Major League Baseball? And if you need a second to take a look, I'll go first. Because I am going to stay in the Central. You got it?
You can go ahead. I'm going to look. I got an idea, but I'm going to look a little bit more.
So I'm going to stay in the Central Division, and I'm going to say it's the Brewers and the Cubs. Brewers currently two games up on the Chicago Cubs, 66-44. Cubs at 64-46. Both of these teams seem to be pretty solidly in the playoff picture. Like, whoever loses out on this division is likely going to be a wild card qualifier. And that's nothing but good. But both of these teams have youth. They can hit. The Brewers can pitch, like really, really pitch. Neither team shook the world up, though the Cubs did make a couple of moves at the trade deadline. I hope that nationally this race gets paid attention to, because right now, in my opinion, it's the most compelling one to follow. Because, like, I'm looking at the AL, Houston and Seattle, I'm not buying it. I don't care that they're only 3.5 back. Detroit, we've talked about this more than once. My one of my buddies is a big Detroit Tigers fan. He was like, see, they're going to go on a losing streak. I'm like, dude, they're still 8 games up. Like, they went 5-5 in their last 10, and they're 8 games up. They're fine. Even the Blue Jays, oddly enough, not what we expected. Sorry about your Orioles, by the way. What the hell? But
Well, they were, you know, I mean, now they're just spoiler roll.
And I just don't think that the Padres are going to make a run on the Dodgers. So for me, it's the Cubs and the Brewers.
There's a couple of them here. The NL East is going to be interesting between the Mets and the Phillies as to how that whole thing comes down, because that's just going to be a dogfight. I think you're looking at the Phillies right now. What are they?
They're a game and a half. They're a game and a half back of the Mets.
The Phillies are half game back or something.
They're half game back of the Mets. And that's a good. You're right.
And I mean, the rest of the division is trash. But the Mets and the Phillies is going to be one of those things that they just come down and they dogfight to the very end of this whole thing. And I think the Mets have underachieved a little bit. I think the Phillies probably that whole division, because like the Braves, who would have thought that the Braves would have imploded the way that they have? But
yeah, it's so crazy.
The team I want to watch and keep an eye on are the Boston Red Sox, who have caught fire. Yeah. They're like, what, 7-3, 1-4 in a row. Like in the middle of June, they were 9.5 games behind the Yankees. They pulled ahead of the Yankees yesterday for the top wild card spot. Came out of nowhere, you know, because I mean, like the Red Sox looked like they were just floundering. And then all of a sudden, you're like, what the hell is going on with Boston?
As a guy who lives out in this area, I get to hear all the whining and the bitching in the moment. I've said this before. I'm going to say this again. Boston fans are the worst sports fans in all of sports.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. End of discussion. No. There's no talk. Let me tell you. When they win, I got to sit there and listen to fuckers talk about they hate us because they ain't us. Tom Brady, rah, 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 go, 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 go. Same thing with the Red Sox. But the second those fuckers start losing, those fans, they done. They are the most fair-weather fickle, to quote Daniel Bryan Danielson, fickle fans in all of sports. Yankee fans are just asshole. Even when they losing, they're just asshole. But Boston, never. Never get them out of here.
I mean,
get them out of here. I hate them.
I'm cooking
harder than Jeff Passan on, oh God, what was his name? Doug Minkiewicz.
Yeah.
Did you see that Twitter stage? I did. Shared that.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was something. But
burn.
Think about this. The AL wild card, unless Toronto collapses, and it doesn't look like they're going to, they might trip up a little bit here and there, then the AL wild card is likely going to come down to, or at least, well, I mean, maybe the two berths will come down. You're going to get the Yankees Red Sox. I mean, and that's great for baseball.
Nationally, this is the thing that makes me sad, is because I think the Cubs and Brewers is a far more interesting division rivalry like story, because those teams are very much, but they're the Midwest, man. Yeah. And people like, that's not what brings in ratings. And it's a shame because there is so much great young talent. You know, when the Angels, you know, were like the best kept secret for a while, and you know, nobody ever got to see Mike Trout play. Yep. And they still, and now Mike Trout is, you know, dealing with injuries and life and all that. Pete Crow Armstrong for the Cubs is having just a season unlike anything in a really long time. And then you add in the passing of Ryan Sandberg. Suddenly now we've got that story going on, because, you know, sports, the beauty of sports is a narrative. And then over in Milwaukee, and I can't remember his name, and I wish Tony was on the call, but he's not yet. There's this young pitcher that throws like 102 miles an hour for nine innings, like just a fucking cannon to boot, is outstanding. People aren't going to get to see that because there are two tight East Coast races right now with the Mets and the Phillies and with the Red Sox and the Yankees fighting over wild card and the NL East respectively. And that's just a damn shame.
Speaking of teams to watch, and our friend Ray Cash probably won't appreciate this too much, watch the Seattle Mariners, because if any team made improvements at the trade deadline more than anybody else, it was the Seattle Mariners. And they're right. Only 3.5 games back. The Astros have looked really strong all year, but there's like that little kind of like wobble going on where and the Rangers aren't that far off either, yeah. Which is, but I think
the Rangers went all in. San Diego went all in at the trade deadline. Like Seattle, they're in but win mode.
Nobody's watching the Mariners though. That's the thing. Like you're talking about, everybody's focused on the East Coast.
Nobody watches the American League West. Like nobody
or the Astros.
And the Houston Astros. Well, because the Houston Astros have just been the Houston Astros. Like to again make a comp. Back in the early 2000s, when everybody hated the Cardinals because they just were. Like they weren't like when they, you know, when Jim Edmonds, Albert Pujols, you know, you had Larry Walker, then they added Matt Holliday and they had all this. The Astros just are. Like for the last 6 to 8 years, that you can't keep a Houston Astro team down. And they have one of the best run organizations in all of sports because of that. You know, the only difference is they win World Series. And the Cardinals didn't win World Series.
Yeah.
They won one in 06 that they shouldn't have won. And then they won the 2011 one. Oh, 11 and 11. The David Freese game. I'll never forget the David Freese game.
And they probably shouldn't have won that one either. But
you know what? Thank goodness for a misplayed line drive. Mm-hmm. It was a misplayed line drive. It should have been caught. I don't care. It wasn't caught. And my team won. So, hey. Last thing before we go, Hall of Fame game was this past Thursday. It was a snooze fest. I'm happy that other people are happy. It was a snooze fest. Come on, man.
I'm not disagreeing with you. It's like, it's the Hall of Fame game. It's for people desperate for the NFL or like, yes. It's like, okay.
Well, and that's the thing that cracks me up is congratulations to the NFL and their marketing team, because they have convinced you, everyone, that preseason football is worth watching. And maybe it is. Those games aren't entertaining. Like, and they're not meant to be entertaining. Like, that's the other thing. I want to be clear. Preseason NFL football is not meant to be an entertaining brand of football. It is meant to be, you know, teams figuring out their rosters. Yeah, I'd rather watch the Ocho than watch NFL preseason football. But
Jerry spitting contest, like, baby.
What cracks me up is, you know, one, this game happens, right? And Detroit gets thumped for most of the game by the Chargers. And it's like watching guys who are going to be bagging groceries in a couple of weeks lose to guys who are going to be bagging groceries in a couple of weeks. And, you know, suddenly, an interception gets thrown and that guy's cooked forever and he's never going to play football for the rest of his life. Whatever. It's going to be fine. I just think it's funny that, yes, I'm happy. I'm more in college football mode. We're less than a month out from college football. That's interesting, as that sport is really in a state of upheaval as it tries to figure out its playoff situation. But all that's for a later podcast. What we are going to do, Dave, we're going to wrap up. Thank you again for indulging. Let's see, what did we cover? Wrestling, bowling, golf, baseball, football.
Baseball.
We hit some bases. We hit some corners. We hit four corners. That's what we did.
See how we did that?
It's not just a clever name, everybody. Look at that. But anyway, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the socials and on the Chair Shot Radio Network?
Oh, you can find me on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG on Facebook, facebook.com/ Attitude of Aggression, and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and Threads. And of course, please go and check out the website, attitudeofaggression.com, where you can get wrestling, UFOs, and Game of Thrones. And I don't know if that was supposed to rhyme, and it probably didn't, but it kind of sounded good. I don't know. Sort of.
It had a little bit of a ring to it. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
And that works. So you can follow me on the social medias at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. You can listen to me every Monday and Tuesday for sure. got that going for us.
Yeah.
Allegedly on Wednesdays. But that's, I got a text literally last Tuesday as I was getting ready to move the laptop over down to the recording studio in the basement. I get a text from Greg DeMarco that's like, last one for a while. I'm like, uh-huh. Cool, bro. Even I'm ready to talk about wrestling again at some point. But that is neither here nor there. Mondays, you can catch me talking nerdy stuff. 300th episode of Bandwagon Nerds yesterday dropped. So that'll be, I hope everybody enjoyed it and got a kick out of the official Bandwagon Nerd list of American treasures. That was a good time. Tuesdays, of course, talking sporty stuff. And allegedly on Wednesdays, I talk wrestling with Greg DeMarco on whatever our podcast is called these days. Even I don't know. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been the Four Corners Podcast here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the chairshot.com. And we will see you next week. Thanks for coming, Dave.
See you later, buddy.